WILL Agricultural Programming is supported by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by providing reliable, consistent credit and financial services to rural communities and agriculture today and tomorrow. More information available at farmcreditil.com.
This is a special edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll lay out a plan of action that producers and landowners may very well be able to use in the near future to reap a benefit from the marketplace as it relates to the conservation practices they use on working lands. The certification could be called STAR, and the process could be Precision Conservation Management. And then a bit later in the program, we'll hear how companies like Anheuser-Busch are looking to deploy this kind of sustainable agriculture for water and land solutions and the conservation of producers across the planet. We'll do all of that right here on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Steve Steerwalt is a Champaign County, Illinois farmer and currently serves as the chairman of the Association of Illinois Soil and Water Conservation Districts. He's also been instrumental in the development of a program called STAR. I asked him just exactly what that is and how it has to deal with water quality.
STAR stands for Saving Tomorrow's Agricultural Resources. And I could give you an hour definition of STAR, but I'll give you the elevator speech on that. And STAR really is an evaluation, verification, and recognition program that is based on farmers' practices. So we farmers, the only way we can really make a contribution, shall we say, to conservation is the practices that we use. And so STAR was developed to give us a way to evaluate our practices that we use as it compares to other farmers and as it compares to the resource concern that we're trying to evaluate against.
It originated here in Champaign County with the Soil and Water Conservation District. However, it spread to several more counties. Is that right?
That's correct. We just started a year ago, and we're basically wanting to keep it relatively small so that we could kind of get the bugs worked out of it. But we, instead of it just being Champaign County, we're evidently getting at least one field form from 15 counties in our first year because people were interested. They wanted to know. They wanted to, you know, some people just want to kind of evaluate their own process. How are we doing compared to everybody else?
Again, this is Steve Steerwalt. He is a Champaign County, Illinois farmer and with the Soil and Water Conservation Districts in the state.
So right now we've got 15 licensees of districts, soil and water districts, and some farm bureaus who have licensed you. The STAR field form is free, but we have a license agreement that these other organizations sign. We had advice early on to keep the integrity of the program. Somebody needs to keep a hold of it so it doesn't become, you know, everybody gets five stars. And so we have 15 licensees right now. We've got a half dozen more that are in the process.
So there must be a future for this. How might STAR be utilized in that future by the industry?
Well, our long-term goal is for us to really make a difference in conservation, we've got to get to the middle adopter farmers. And that group of farmers is they're not against conservation, but they need a reason to try conservation practices. And so we're hoping through the STAR program that we can actually help industry with their needs also. They have the Walmarts of the world have set sustainability goals. And we've talked to some of the people who sell to Walmart a year ago and asked them a simple question. You know, do you get requests for sustainably raised bulk commodities? And they say we get that request all the time. We don't know how to do it. So STAR may not be the way to do it, but it is a way that industry can help out, can be involved in the whole supply chain and help encourage farmers to do things more sustainably.
On that note, let's bring Laura Gentry into our conversation. She's the Director of Water Quality Research at the Illinois Corn Growers Association. Laura, STAR is a rating system, but there has to be some kind of science behind that to get to the ratings. And I take it that PCM, or Precision Conservation Management, is that structure. Can you describe it to me?
Sure. So Precision Conservation Management is the Illinois Corn Growers Association, the Illinois Corn Marketing Board's response to the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy that came out in 2015. And that strategy told us what it's going to take to meet US EPA's requirements for a 45% reduction in total nitrogen and total phosphorus losses by 2035. And in Illinois, we address this by setting an interim goal, and that interim goal is a 25% reduction in phosphorus and a 15% reduction in nitrate nitrogen losses by 2025. The way that the science assessment set this up and the research that they did demonstrated that we can't meet that final goal without essentially applying a new conservation practice on every acre of farmland in Illinois, because Illinois is such a large contributor of the nitrogen and phosphorus that makes its way to the Gulf of Mexico, which is what the nutrient loss reduction strategy was all about. So PCM is our response to that. It is our first effort and our best effort to help farmers to make good decisions about water quality and other nutrient loss and resource issues. So the program itself is a way to help farmers to reinvest our checkoff dollars, farmers' dollars, in a way to maintain our freedom to operate and to address our part of the water quality problem.
So where in Illinois is PCM, I don't know whether practice is the right word, but where is it in place?
So the PCM program, it serves 16 counties in Illinois, and we are focused on the central area of Illinois, which is the area that has the largest amount of nutrient loss problems, according to the nutrient loss reduction strategy.
There are a lot of efforts, Laura, in this realm. What makes precision conservation management different?
PCM is the first effort of its kind in the country to look at farm financials as the central focus, along with these conservation practice adoptions. Right, there are a lot of programs that are out there, but they're usually from associations that are organizations or companies that have a different primary focus. And for us, our first priority is to help farmers make the best decisions for themselves, to make financially responsible decisions, because we believe no farmer helps anyone if they're being so green or so conservation-minded that they put themselves out of business.
Can you explain any major findings that we've come across so far?
That's one of the great things about PCM is it's a big data effort. We are collecting a lot of information. We have 3 years of data now. 2018 will be our fourth year of data. And we've done a preliminary analysis. And it's helped us to look at the practices that do serve farmers in a financially responsible way. When we have conservation programs that either don't affect yield or that reduce other inputs so that farmers aren't losing money. And some of our preliminary findings are with tillage. We found that, say, for corn production, strip till is a very good financially based decision. It's helping farmers. It doesn't reduce yields, and it helps them to incorporate some of their passes so that in a profitability way, in a profitability sense, they're incorporating passes without having to pay extra money. So that's been a good financially based practice. One tillage pass is also a good financially based practice. The more tillage passes beyond one, two, three, four tillage passes for corn production are losing money. We find something very similar in terms of our nitrogen management. We really focus on nitrogen management, tillage, and cover crops in PCM. And with nitrogen management, we find that when farmers apply more than 40% of their nitrogen in the fall, number one, they're putting on more nitrogen than farmers who apply it more in season. They aren't making higher yields, and those two come together to equal they're less profitable. So we can demonstrate that.
You can demonstrate it, but can other farmers find that so they can benchmark themselves or see how this works against their own operations?
That's a great part of PCM is that it makes these meaningful comparisons for farmers within the program. A farmer can compare his own practices. He can compare his conservation analysis and his financial assessment with farmers doing other practices. It's all anonymized, but a farmer using one tillage pass ahead of his corn can compare the way his assessment with farmers who are doing strip tillage or no-till for corn. We can tease it down all the way into what region they're in, even. So we can really start to look at differences. What soil productivity ratings, if a farmer wants to look at it in that way, we can give them some really meaningful comparisons. For farmers outside of the program, yes, the answer is yes. In the long term, within the next year, we will have summaries of PCM farmer data that will help those farmers also to make decisions about their own practices.
One of the farmers that's been making those kinds of decisions joins us now as well. He's Roger Sy from Newman, Illinois, and serves as the vice chair of the Illinois Corn Marketing Board. Can you tell me a little bit, Roger, about your operation?
Okay, I've been farming now since the early 1970s, and recently I've started to slow down a little bit because of my age, but through the years I've had ground in Douglas and Edgar counties and Vermilion County. Along that time, we've always tried to be conservation-minded. My Vermilion County farms especially had an area where the glacier came through, so we had to deal with a lot of terraces, waterways, and such. So we've always worried a lot about nutrient loss reduction and worked to keep what we've got in the fields. So through the years, that's been an important part of our operation, an important part of what we're doing with Illinois corn.
I want to delve into your time with Illinois corn just a bit. As the vice chairman of the Illinois Corn Marketing Board in particular, why is it that you as farmers decided to start a program like PCM or Precision Conservation Management?
PCM is just another step along the way for us. Through the years, we've always been very active. We've known this has a lot to do with the bottom line for our constituents, and our mission is to help with the economic well-being of the Illinois corn farmer. So through the years, we've had other programs that we work with, such as T for 2000, which, we came pretty close to reaching those numbers we set for ourselves and gave us pretty good momentum. So we also came up with the Council for Best Management Practices, and, that was a conglomeration of seed and fertilizer, chemical industry, seed or commodity organizations, and that was our main goal, was to start to work on cleaning up the water supplies, keeping the nitrogen and phosphorus in the fields where we put them, and that alone helps with the bottom line on most farms if you're able to utilize what you put there rather than lose what your inputs are. Then we came up with another program, the right product in the right place at the right time with the right amounts. So this is just another step along the way, because as we've progressed, there's more and more data out there, and it's more and more reliable data. And this is just another way that we see of moving on up the ladder and making it better for our farmers.
Hey, Steve, one final question for you. Any advice for farmers who are hesitant to adopt conservation practices due to costs?
Costs. Now is a very difficult time for farmers. Costs are razor thin. And so anytime we as farmers try a new practice, it introduces risk to us. And so we're hesitant to try new practices sometime. What I've been happy to find on my own farm is that as I have introduced these conservation practices, they have actually reduced my costs and have been a good investment.
If you'd like to learn more about Precision Conservation Management and the STAR program, you can do that online at precisionconservation.org. That's precisionconservation.org. The partners there are the Illinois Corn Growers Association, the Illinois Farm Business Farm Management Association, or FBFM, and of course the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. So you're wondering whether this can really pay off, maybe about now, for a producer that might be looking for a premium for a commodity like corn. This seems like it may not work, but frankly, it may be that it will work. Large companies like PepsiCo, which uses corn for fructose, and McDonald's, which consumes 2% of the United States beef supply fed by grain raised by corn farmers in the U.S. And then the one we're going to hear from now, Anheuser-Busch, which uses barley, corn, and rice produced by U.S. farmers, all have some sustainability issues that they've been working on, and somebody in the procurement section, which is expected to find ways to help meet their sustainability goals. Those goals often are conservation of soil and water, but also include financial conservation of the farmer, in the case of all three of those institutions. I talked with the folks at Anheuser-Busch last summer. Two members of their sustainability team, Katie Hort and Greg Belt. I asked Greg to explain their goals.
At Anheuser-Busch, we just launched our sustainability goals back in March, and we have four pillars. The first is around water, so you can't make beer without water, of course. We've committed to 100% of our high-risk or high-stress watersheds to provide water access and improve measurably improve water quality. Our second pillar is around smart agriculture. And here we've got Katie, and Katie can talk in detail about it. But this is around making our farmers and ensuring our farmers are 100% skilled, financially empowered, and connected. And I'll let Katie talk in detail about what that is. Our third pillar is around climate action. So that is 100% renewable electricity or 100% purchased electricity from renewable sources and a 25% carbon reduction. And our final pillar is around circular packaging, and that's where 100% of our packaging is going to be made from either returnable or majority recycled content. So a lot of numbers there, a lot of KPIs, but when you look at it, it's around ABI or beer. If you look at beer, beer is a natural product. It's made from natural ingredients, and we're intimately connected to the communities that we brew in and that we operate in, as well as that we grow in. And so it's our obligation to make sure that the community is thriving, that our farmers are thriving, and the environment is thriving.
So numbers three and four are pretty easy to understand, energy and recycling. However, the first two are a little bit more difficult. So let's start with water.
Sure.
And sustainability. You used a key word for most producers. For some of the listeners, a watershed is that area that is drained. For instance, if you think of a valley with a river and maybe some creeks in it, the Mississippi River Valley is a giant-sized watershed. But there are much smaller watersheds in our area. You might think of the Imbera River watershed, something that is drained by a much smaller area.
Sure.
So you're working in some places that would have a watershed that would be in peril in some form. Tell me about that and what your hopes are in order to help those watersheds be in better condition and what the problems might be.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have done an extensive analysis to look at our watersheds across the world. We've identified over 36 that we believe that are in high stress. And our commitment here is to measurably improve them. Which is quite a bit of a challenge. It doesn't sound great. It doesn't sound like super sexy, but it actually quite is. When you talk about measurable improvement and looking at certain KPIs of that watershed, and it might be the acidity level, it might be the soil content within the water. It could be access to water. Many communities don't have complete access to it. So our commitment, we're partnered with the World Wildlife Fund, as well as the Nature Conservancy, to improve water quality and water access and water availability in those watersheds.
Are there any that we will be familiar with? Or are they small? Are they big? Are they what size? Or is some place that we might know something about?
Yeah, so we're focused on two watersheds, particularly within the U.S. One is around our Cartersville, Georgia, around right on the border between Georgia and Alabama. I think if anyone has been following the news about Atlanta over the past several years, Atlanta has had some dire stress situations in terms of water. So we're working with the Nature Conservancy and protecting that watershed and providing and doing what we can to support watershed projects. It could be planting trees in a specific area. It could be supporting the building of a dam. It could be a number of different things. That's what we're doing in general and around our 36 watersheds.
But what asset does Anheuser-Busch have in that area?
Oh, so we have a brewery, right? So that's the key, Todd. We have a brewery there. We are, when you look at that watershed, we're actually a very minor consumer of water. But again, without water, there's no beer, right? So we need to do our part to ensure that there's not only water, not just for us, but for the entire community, right? For the growers, for obviously the common consumer. And we're committed to do that, working with partners. So when you look at our goal, it's not our goal, our water goal and our water ambition, it's not just about improving our own efficiency. I think that's an ambition that's been 5 or 10 years ago, and we are one of the world's most efficient breweries, or we are the most efficient. So our focus is actually going beyond our brewery walls and working with communities, working with partners to identify these really, what are essentially really complex issues, to improve them, and we're committed to doing that.
Do you have a single item or a series of items from that watershed that you can say, these are the items that we're working to correct or to fulfill at this point?
Yeah, so we have a process. It's an 8-step process where we first do an independent assessment to identify the problems in that watershed. And we're conducting those assessments now. I would say we're about 75% complete through those. And what we've identified, Todd, is that many watersheds have some common problems as well as common solutions. So a watershed that might be, an example, in Cartersville might be very similar to one that's in Columbia, that might be very similar to one in India. And the solutions to solve those problems are similar. So we're taking the best practices that are around the world and implementing those in the watersheds that we've identified.
I'll ask again, best management practices, things like what?
It would be things, I think, first of all, it comes down to, I think it sounds weird, but the biggest best practice you can do is having the right people at the table. And that's one of the first things that we've known. This is not just an Anheuser-Busch problem. This is not just a Nature Conservancy problem. It's not just a community problem. So I think the first thing that we said, and what we've noticed is a key to success is getting people around the table to agree on a common set of problems. And once those common set of problems are identified, then devising a solution actually kind of falls into place. So it might be planting trees. It might be soil cleanup. It might be educating farmers. There's huge emphasis on educating farmers, particularly in Mexico. And it might be all of those solutions, but the key to success is actually getting everybody around the table at the same time with an open attitude.
Katie Horde, let's move on to you and talk about the way you work directly with farmers and some of the goals that you might have for them. One of them is to help make them financially stable or sustainable. And that truly is an enormous goal for a company to take on, to service the producers who are growing barley for them.
Right. So yes, that piece is what keeps us up at night. But so our smart ag goal is that 100% of our direct farmers will be skilled, connected, and financially empowered by 2025. And so when we set out to do that, we were looking at the landscapes in which we operate. And our farmers are quite different. We work with large-scale farmers in the U.S. and Argentina and small-scale farmers in places like Uganda and India. And so we were looking at what is our end goal there. And it really was about creating these thriving ag communities. And so in order to do that, you have to target who's at the center of that, and that's the farmer. And so we really wanted to focus in on how can we better enable that farmer to deal with the challenges and the obstacles that they face in their environment. And obviously that's going to be different by environment. And so, you know, when we think about skill, does that farmer have the right varieties that are appropriate for their environment and that are improving their yields and productivity? Do they have the management practices to deal with the challenges they face in their environment? And again, to drive that productivity and efficiency. And then, you know, leveraging our team. So we have our own agronomists and research teams that operate across 15 different countries. So really leveraging them and making sure that they're working with our farmers to get those results. On the connected piece, we have our flagship program Smart Barley, and leveraging that online tool to get better information to farmers, whether it's through a digital platform, through SMS, or other tools that we're working to identify. And then the last one, which you mentioned, was financial empowerment. And again, that's going to look very different across different markets.
That's Katie Horde from Anheuser-Busch. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Katie Horde is telling us just a bit about some of the goals Anheuser-Busch has for its producers around the planet. One of those is financial sustainability. I wondered what that meant for a smallholder farmer.
So for a smallholder farmer, that may be, you know, securing a bank account or access to credit. In some place like the U.S., that takes a different turn. And that's, you know, when we're focusing in on what are those practices and technologies that we want farmers to adopt, are they able to do that from a financial perspective? Are we able to help with that, take away that risk of investing in these new technologies and finding opportunities for them to do so, whether that's through shared funding or grants or, you know, whatever shape that may take, but an understanding how farmers can continue to invest in their business to grow for the long term.
So the listeners to the radio program will know that I've talked about this before, that across the United States there are about 180,000 commercial farmers. Farmers like my brothers that you hear me talk about from time to time, they raise everything from truck crops to grains and oilseeds, corn and soybeans like we have in Illinois, and barley. So there just aren't that many in the state of Illinois, maybe 25,000. Iowa is kind of that same way. I don't recall what the North Dakota numbers are off the top of my head. However, you're a very much smaller subset in the United States. How many producers do you work with?
In the U.S., for barley farmers, it's around 600. So our goal also applies to our other priority crops. So that's hops, rice, corn, cassava, and sorghum, where we have direct sourcing programs. So we're also looking at rice in the U.S. and hops.
Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: University of Illinois Extension, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Illinois. More details on agriculture at willag.org.
Today we're talking about sustainability issues as it relates to conservation of soil and water and the financial health of farmers across the planet. The folks at Anheuser-Busch have, like many other companies, executives oriented to this sustainability process. I talked to a couple of them last summer in Idaho at a Growers' Day event for their barley producers. Katie Hoard joined me. I wanted to know from her what sustainability financially for smallholder farmers look like, for instance, in Uganda.
You know, when you look at a farmer in Uganda who's planting and harvesting by hand, the quickest win there is introducing mechanization. And when I say mechanization, that doesn't mean a large combine, right? That could be a hand planter or harvester, and helping them gain access to that, training them on how to use that, and helping them finance that piece can be a huge win in terms of gains we see in yield and productivity.
Speaking of finance, that's one of the things you and I talked about a little bit, is that you're looking at the whole of the farm operation and trying to figure out what really a producer might need to help them be more sustainable. In our talks on the air again, we talk oftentimes about profit per acre, sometimes about per bushel, but this is a big issue for producers.
It is, and I think that, you know, sustainability has to go hand in hand with the economics of farming, right? It has to make sense from an economic perspective, and looking at and I do think the two go hand in hand. When you're driving efficient use of inputs and managing your land so that it's producing more, you know, sustainability does make sense in the context of farming. I think it's just helping farmers to bring those new practices and new technologies and helping them to adopt those that can really drive that home.
Greg, one of the things that I've noticed over the last couple of years is that Anheuser-Busch, Budweiser, is extraordinarily connected to its growers, more than almost any other organization, and I work with, of course, a lot of them over the years, that I have been able to come into contact with. Why do you think that's the case?
First of all, I think it goes back to our business model. So if you look at Anheuser-Busch and Budweiser versus, let's say, Apple, who makes a smartphone in one factory around the world. Anheuser-Busch, we make our product locally in 12 breweries around the U.S. and 250 breweries around the world. We generally grow locally and we employ locally. So when we talk about Budweiser being the champion of growers in the U.S., it's natural to us because we're intimately connected to those communities. So it's not something that actually just feels quite natural to us. It feels like it's well within our everyday business. So we don't look at it as, we look at it as a special event, but we look at it as, hey, this is the right thing to do. Let's just do it.
Greg Belt and Katie Hort are both part of the sustainability team at Anheuser-Busch. I spoke to them last summer during a Growers Day event in Idaho Falls, Idaho. This is an example of how a company, in this case Anheuser-Busch, but it could be McDonald's or PepsiCo or Cargill, all of which have sustainability procurement officers, or even ADM, who has an officer with sustainability in its title, that are looking towards sustainability factors that include the financial health of producers across the United States and around the planet. The solutions are for the conservation of soil, water, and of farmers. This has been a special edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.